The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
We begin with something unprecedented in American history. Opening statements in the criminal trial of a former president. Presidents have been impeached, they've resigned, they've been voted out of office. Never before has a former president faced a jury of his peers in a criminal court.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was news from ABC. Of course, every major outlet today is covering former President Donald Trump's criminal trial. It has formally got underway in New York City today with opening arguments from the prosecution and the defense. It almost seems surreal to me. You almost think, nothing will come of this, right? But there are real consequences if the president is found guilty. So we'll continue to follow. First, let me just welcome you. I'm so grateful to be here with you today. I'm Mariani. Maggie is on the board. Patrick's going to take your calls today, and we'd love to talk to you. We've got a lot to get into today, and I hope you can hang out with me. We'll pray the chaplet in about an hour. Just want to give you an early heads up for that. If you have a special need or intention, you want to get in with your prayer, good time to do that, okay? Tell others about the chaplet, too. We'll continue to build the family and share answered prayers and petitions, and we'll pray together coming up. On my list is prayer for this country, for protection from degeneration, from disaster, from war, from disease, from corruption, right? Pray for our leaders. This Alvin Bragg case, Trump's been accused by the Manhattan District Attorney, the DA. There's a guy named Alvin Bragg, and Bragg is accusing him of altering business records to cover up, hush money payments to a porn star, a woman named Stormy Daniels, so that Trump could get elected in 2016. The National Review's Andy McCarthy, who's been on this program many times, he makes a case that, Bragg has an all-around bogus case. I don't know where you stand on this. I mean, there's so many cases against Trump. I know it could be confusing. That's why I'm trying to just reset it for you so you can understand where we're coming from on all of this. Is this really election interference? Are they trying to keep the president from campaigning? Is this legitimate? I mean, nobody wanted to touch this case at all. You took misdemeanors, you turn them into, very serious charges. New York County DA, McCarthy was saying that the DA can't enforce federal election laws. This is out of his purview. But the former president has called the trial a sham. And if you saw the footage of him, you might agree. He looked very somber. The trial got underway because he understands the consequences of it. Here's a little bit more from ABC News. Listen.
Former President Trump seated at the defense table. As he walked in, he called this a sad day. Both he and the country are experiencing something entirely new. Prosecutors trying to prove a former president committed a crime. In this case, falsifying business records to conceal a hush payment to an adult film actress.
This morning, opening statements in the historic criminal trial of former President Trump. Seated in court, Trump is relegated to silence. Prosecutors will introduce the case, which they've said is about whether the defendant, Donald Trump, broke the law, falsifying business records to cover up an agreement with others to unlawfully influence the 2016 presidential election. In their opening statement, defense attorneys are expected to say Trump relied on lawyers to arrange the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels to keep her from revealing her claim of a sexual encounter with Trump, which he has long denied.
I was paying a lawyer and marked it down as a legal expense, some account I didn't know, marked it down as a legal expense. That's exactly what it was.
Prosecutors say Trump worried about his electoral prospects and turned to National Enquirer publisher David Pecker, who they say was part of an alleged scheme to buy and bury unflattering stories about Trump. Pecker's among the early witnesses. Stormy Daniels will testify, along with Michael Cohen, Trump's former fixer, who wired her the hush money. Prosecutors said some of the witnesses have what you might consider some baggage. Trump says he could testify, too, during a trial expected to last 6 weeks.
No, I'm testifying. I tell the truth. I mean, all I can do is tell the truth.
The testimony is going to be heard by a jury of 7 men and 5 women. That includes 2 native New Yorkers and 2 immigrants. 7 jurors have advanced degrees. 1 juror praised Trump's outspokenness. Another called the former president selfish. Each promised to be fair and impartial.
Well, I'm sitting back as I listen to this. Historians are going to look back at this era in American politics And it's going to be, it'll be an interesting chapter, to say the least. I mean, you've got Russian collusion, you had Hillary's email server, you've got Hunter Biden, you've got the president facing criminal charges for allegedly, you know, paying hush money to a former porn star. I mean, how much crazier can it get? The story's still being written, but boy, what a window. And if what the president is saying, I never want to believe that the government is out to, you know, we are going to become more like a China or a Russia, the way that we deal with our political opponents. I don't want to believe that. So I hope truth surfaces and justice is rightly served. No clear timeline for how the trial will last, but it will overlap with a hearing at the Supreme Court on Thursday on whether or not President Trump had presidential immunity for the actions he took on January 6th. So this is all going to continue. All going to continue to come to play out. Maggie and I were looking at a video right before the program started. I don't know if you saw this yet or not. I was pretty shocked. And Maggie, speaking of how just crazy the times are, Maggie had showed me a video. She said, did you see the Gavin Newsom piece? And I read a little bit about it this morning, and I went and I looked it up. There's an ad out that portrays women trying to leave the state to have an abortion. Right? And you see this car driving down the road. The woman looks like they're criminals, right? They're looking over their shoulder like they just robbed the bank.
Real
nervous.
There's
a police car behind them. The lights are all flashing, right? And then they get pulled over. And the cop comes up and says, ma'am, I need you to step out of the car. And he kind of bangs a pregnancy test, right, on the door, Mag. And next thing you know, you see the girl being thrown over the car, being handcuffed. And the whole message of that was?
That you, if you think that you need an abortion and you're crossing state lines, we will find you and we will hunt you down. That's what they're trying to make it seem. This is so ridiculous.
Did you have the ad? I don't know if it'll portray well.
I do have, we'll see if the audio translates.
We'll play the ad for you. This ad is called, let me see if I can find it, Fugitive. That's what it's called. The new television ad is called Fugitive. And again, this is an encounter. Supposedly, you know, with this, by the way, is being targeted for Alabama. The ad's coming your way. She's less than a mile from leaving Alabama to seek abortion services, but it's too late. The next thing you know, she's being pulled over by the popo. Listen to this.
We're almost there. You're gonna make it.
Trump Republicans want to criminalize young Alabama women who travel for reproductive care.
Miss, I'm going to need you to step out of the vehicle, take a pregnancy test.
Stop them by taking action at righttotravel.org. Campaign for Democracy Group is responsible for the content of this advertising.
It is the most over-the-top, ridiculous ad you will ever see. It is ridiculous. What was your reaction when you saw that, Meg?
I was like, this cannot
be real.
It was
like a spoof, right?
I was like, is this a Babylon Bee sketch? Like, I thought it was like an SNL sketch or something. Like, it just doesn't seem real.
And I said to Maggie, I said, the thing is, I mean, Maggie and I are both rational people. And we were sitting back and we're thinking, oh, who's going to believe this? It's so ridiculous.
Read that comment that you...
Yeah, I will. So let me share with you. So I said to Maggie, who's going to believe this, right? And then I thought, you know, I bet people will.
Yeah.
People are so malleable, so influenced by what they see on television. And again, just to qualify this, and if you've seen the ad, feel free to sound off. You can dial in 888-914-914. This ad's going to appear on Monday. So we're giving a pre, I guess it's today. Today is Monday, I guess, right in Alabama, where, you know, Republicans are life is strong there. The Dems, let me reverse this, put it a different way. They're like, Republicans are somehow going to incarcerate a woman who, you know, leaves the state to seek an abortion. I love the way they talk about it. You know, they use the term reproductive, you know, care or whatever the euphemism was they used to try to make it sound, oh my gosh, she's just trying to get help. So the state's abortion ban, Alabama, one of the strictest in the nation, it outlaws procedures at all stages of pregnancy, and there are no exceptions for rape or incest. And this is a burr under the saddle of the culture of death. It's a thorn in their side. The lines they use, Trump Republicans want to criminalize young Alabama women who travel for reproductive care. And you see this poor woman, terrified, being thrown over the car and handcuffed, right? here's some of the ads. And I said to Meg, oh, that'll never happen. Let me share with you. And this, I found this on YouTube, right? I just went to YouTube to watch the ad. This is the very first ad up. And it says, this is the first comment. Thank you, Maggie. This is the first comment that was up underneath of the little ad called The Fugitive. This is powerful. All of us women need to band together to make responsible voting choices in November. The overturning of Roe v. Wade has been disastrous. We need to have the right to make our own choices over our bodies.
Sorry, what?
And that's a woman's reproductive health care's basic fundamental right. That's a given.
Oh, my goodness.
So somebody out there, Maggie, thinks that ad's powerful.
She or he is not the only one. I'm sure there's plenty of people that just gobble that up.
Well, I'll share another one. This one says, there's no way this could happen. And then I started to think of all the way no things have happened.
Stop it.
Yeah, that person thought, yeah. I started to think, that's exactly my first record. This will never happen, right? Another person says, if MAGA gets their way, we'll see this everywhere. Vote
Stop.
Blue.
Oh,
Vote blue.
My gosh.
And let me see if there's any somebody. Women, please wake up. Simple one. Like, you know, it's so ridiculous. One final one. Somebody said ridiculous. Anyone would spend any time or money or energy on a politically charged ad. Thank you. One rational voice out of a ton of these.
That's good.
And the last one here. Well, their menfolk told them to vote again. Hillary, and they did. Reap the whirlwind. You got what you wanted. As if though you voted for Trump and that's what ultimately happened. So it's bizarre. But, you know, this is the type of stuff that goes out on social media. This is stuff that people get exposed to. Mm-hmm. And they believe it's real. I mean, people may not be as educated, Maggie, or me, or those who are listening. And they might think, oh, my gosh, these MAGA Republicans are going to throw women in jail for being pregnant.
Worst thing to happen to this country.
Horrible. Absolutely horrible. So there you have it. Gavin Newsom. By the way, you said he was the nephew of Nancy Pelosi?
He's Nancy Pelosi's nephew.
Oh, my gosh. And I think I want to say he's Catholic or was Catholic. I don't know that for sure. I didn't look it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's been a surrogate, if you will, for President Biden and has pushed abortion in a big-time way. And, you know, one of the commentators made the point that, hey, Republicans have really owned the southern border messaging. You know, crossing of the border. And that's a hard one to talk against. Clearly, we see crime and fentanyl and all these other problems with the border. And with an executive order, this administration could do something about it. It's not even about money, right? It's about ideology down there. But the Dems are playing the abortion card here, and they're trying to instill fear. You know, what is fear a hallmark of, right? What is it? It's a hallmark of the evil one. I really believe that. Satan wants you to be afraid. You know, when you're with the Lord, peace. When you're with the Lord, there is no fear. What did John Paul II and others always say? Be not afraid, right? So what are they playing here? They're playing this fear card, this darkness, you know? And believe it or not, the fear of not being able to abort a child helped the Dems. It helped propel Democrat candidates, candidates into key victories during the midterm elections in 2022 and those races last year. I think economy this year is going to be number one. I thought that in the midterms too, and I was wrong. So just take, I'm by no means prescient, right? I don't know how this shakes out. I called the midterms totally wrong. I thought economy certainly would drive things, but apparently abortion was a big issue for a lot of people. And I wonder if it will be the same there as well. So, of course, you have Arizona, the Supreme Court this month upholding the 1864 law that bans nearly all abortions. So we are really seeing, after Dobbs, this play out, right? We're seeing a battle. But Newsom said in a social media post at the time that California, which borders Arizona, would be a refuge for women affected by this decision. So we'll see what happens. Let me go to Jose in Northern California. Hi, Jose. Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. Thanks for dialing in. Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call. I love your guys' show.
Thanks.
I just turned on the radio and I heard the topic and I said, you know what? I gotta say something. I gotta whistle blow.
Yeah, please.
I'm from the Central Valley here in California, and when all this news about banning abortion came out, I follow one of my school teachers who was really pro-choice, really you know, like it was a right to be able to have an abortion. I'm looking at his Facebook and he made a post where he said, if there's any female students that want to go on an out of state camping trip, to let him know. And, I think that's sort of like code, like, hey, if you need an abortion and if it happens here in California that it's illegal, I mean, this is a democratic state, you know, it's still illegal here, unfortunately, but you know, that's kind of what they want to do. They want to kind of, you know, have these out of state. Sorry, go ahead.
No, Jose, I was going to say, you know, I'm sure it probably is code. I think, you know, I think sometimes people think they're doing a good thing. They're doing the right thing, even though clearly this is not right on any level. Just pray. Yeah. Pray for that former teacher of yours. Maybe you saw that for a purpose. And maybe even send information to him. You know, send something over. You can evangelize. You've got that connection. Hey, I got to leave it right there. But thank you for joining me. I'm glad you tuned in. Keep it set here. We got a lot of great conversation coming straight up. I do want to touch on another issue. I know there's a lot of calls on this issue, and we could maybe hit on this again. I want to talk a little bit about the rise of anti-Semitism in the country as well, and I'd love to hear from you on this. Ivy League schools, right, supposed to be the best in the country, and in order to get into them, sometimes you got to be the top of your class, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Columbia, Stanford, right? Best test scores, maybe family connections, maybe a lot of money as well, but are they really the place you want to be? Over the last week or so, student protests and demonstrations have been taking place at these schools against Israel, and students have been shouting all these pro-Hamas slogans. If you turn on your news this morning, you saw protests, you know, taking place. Turn on your TV throughout the past few weeks, you've seen that, right? In fact, Representative Ilhan Omar's own daughter was arrested for being part of a camp in at Columbia as part of the demonstrations. She's now complaining that she's homeless and hungry since she's been suspended by school. Columbia and Yale both suspended classes today, and they decided to go all virtual in order to protect Jewish students. Jewish students, there's been explicit threats against these Jewish students. As these intense anti-protests broke out on these campuses, one Israeli student told Fox News about his encounters with some of the pro-Hamas mobs at Columbia. Listen to this.
No, this isn't Gaza. This is Yale. Police are swarming the campus. They are chanting right now, as you hear. There's been hundreds of students protesting Israel at Yale. Anti-Israel protests plague colleges and universities across the country, all while Jewish communities to celebrate Passover. Our next guest witnessed the anarchy firsthand on Columbia University campus that pushed today's classes online, they say, for their safety. One was nearly burned after a protester lit his American flag on fire. Here to discuss it are Columbia University students Alicia Baker and Andrew Parker Stein. Andrew, it was you Saturday night, right? What happened?
So basically, a bunch of Jewish students came to campus to respond to the encampment. We just sang songs of peace. On the way out, a pro-Hamas mob started chasing us, calling us in the middle of campus, calling us inbred, that we have no culture. One grabbed my friend's Israeli flag in the middle of campus, carried it to a mob by the gate that were communicating with the angry mobs outside of campus. They threw objects at him. They started harassing him. They tried to light his flag on fire. And there, nothing is done with this. And after that, on the way out, we were talking to public safety. They started following us on the way out, and public safety just shrugged their shoulders. They're the ones who are responsible in protecting us. And the only protection that we had was we have one student who's a 6'5 student, and everyone hid behind him as we were leaving campus. And an angry mob of pro-Hamas students chased us off of campus, screaming, "We don't want no Zionists here, get out of here," and a bunch of other.
And these are students.
So that's a great question. This is the most shocking thing on campus right now. We have video proof of people sneaking into campus. The encampment themselves are bragging about the fact that many aren't students. Right. And so we don't know if they're students. Likely they're students. They might not be students. And Columbia is doing nothing about the fact.
Unbelievable. They just shut down school. Alicia, what's your experience?
I mean, look, we've been calling this out for 6 months now. We know that these are anti-Semites using anti-Semitic
rhetoric.
Since the October 7th attack. Since the first set of protests on October 12th. And now we see what happens when you don't shut down anti-Semitic rhetoric and you allow these people to feel entitled. You know, there were some arrests on Thursday. That was great. I commend the university for doing that. Guess what? They walk 20 yards to their left. They do the exact same thing on the other lawn, and they've been Thursday. And now they're harassing us. They're yelling, go back to Poland. You know, when they say we don't want no Zionists here and death to the Zionist state, you know, what's the game plan? Where should we go?
Right.
Now they're saying go back to Poland. We all know what happened last time the Jews were in Poland.
Nobody should fear for their life, period. Matt Lamb is associate editor at the College Fix, which you can find at thecollegefix.com. He joins us today for some perspective. Matt, thanks for your patience. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I'd love to get your take on what we're seeing across the country at so many of these different institutions of higher learning. Harvard closed down Harvard Yard today. Columbia and Yale, they're having trouble keeping their students under control, especially with very clear anti-Semitic behavior taking place. Is this kind of stuff taking place on other campuses around the country? I mean, how prolific of a problem is it? And what's behind this? I mean, it almost seems organized to me.
Absolutely. So just from what I've seen online and what we've covered at the College Fix, this is happening. This is happening at the University of Michigan. This is happening at Vanderbilt, Yale, Harvard, Columbia. And this has been going on not just since October 7th, since Hamas terrorists attacked Israel, but this has been going on for years on college campuses. Unfortunately, what it is the ongoing conflict Middle East in Israel has really come to American college campuses, and there is a lot of tension between particularly Jewish students and pro-Palestinian students, whether it's encampments, the encampment is almost tame compared to there was a Yale student who was stabbed in the eye, I think with a flagpole. There was, students have been spit on, yelled, anti-Semitic slurs. This is unfortunately going on across the country.
So, I wonder what's driving this. Clearly, we see the war in the Middle East, but what's the role of social media in all of this? So, yeah, I spoke to a young millennial the other day about it, and he says, what happened, to Israel by Hamas was horrible. He says, but I have a real problem with Zionism. Is there an anti-Zionistic mantra, an anti-Semitic mantra now being fomented on social media? Or are you getting both sides? I mean, what are you seeing happening in that realm?
Absolutely. I mean, I think in some ways the encampments and the protests are, you could say they're performative, and that it gets you the quick clip on Twitter or TikTok or wherever. I think that people are all seeing things happening in Israel, and some may be true, some of it may be, deceptively edited, deep fakes. It's hard sometimes to sort out the truth, particularly because most of us don't speak Yiddish, we don't speak Hebrew, we don't speak Arabic, so we can't necessarily decode foreign language news sources, of course. And so I do think a lot of this can also be driven by students that they don't have a clear grounding in the truth and in morality. I mean, I think we can all say that what's happening anytime someone dies, an innocent civilian, that's terrible. And we need to pray for those people. Well, I think a lot of the students on campus are very much in the mindset that their side must absolutely be right. I think a lot of these pro-Palestinian students, they are unfortunately, I think, taking out thousands of years, hundreds of years of conflict with, people who are Jewish, and trying to condense it into, they're taking it out on people who are literally like their classmate, their neighbor. And that's just disgusting.
I totally agree on that. And my heart goes out to the innocent civilians who have died as a result of Hamas's action. I mean, 30, some estimates are as high as 30,000 are dead. I don't know how accurate that is, but I can see the concern. It's very humanitarian on the other side, saying, hey, we need to have some sort of resolution here. I have a problem from with some of the chants and the eradication of Israel in that area. How do you deal with the death toll and the fact that Israel is not going to stop until Hamas is eradicated, even if it means loss of innocent life?
Well, I'll say that is a question not that I would trust the NGOs and our political leaders. I would say that's a question for them. But I think on campus, what leaders need to do is bring together the students and say, look, we're not going to solve what is happening overseas. And I totally, and they should say, I sympathize. You have family in Israel. You have family living in Gaza. You have family in the West Bank. And totally should be sympathetic. But they should say, look, we're not going to solve it in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We're not going to solve it in New Haven, Connecticut. What you guys need to do is learn to get along, go through school, and then guess what? Maybe in a few years, you can be the people who understand peace and understand conflict resolution. And then maybe that's how you contribute to what is going on in the Middle East. Be sympathetic, crack down on the disruptors, but also help them realize that that person they're yelling, you know, Zionists go home, that's their fellow classmate at Columbia, Yale, Princeton, wherever.
So are universities changing, Matt? Are they beginning to crack down a little bit more? There was, I think, a greater tolerance several months ago than we're seeing now. Where are officials at some of these institutions?
I think there has been a lot of backlash, particularly since that December congressional hearing with Harvard's president, Penn's president, MIT's president. We saw last week that Columbia University, working with the New York Police Department, cleared an encampment, but you know, as the clip you just played, they simply just moved a couple yards away, and you know, tensions continue to rise. There was a video of a Jewish professor who was denied access to what's essentially this autonomous zone now at Columbia, run by pro-Palestinian activists. So, you know, how exactly the university will end this, you know, we can certainly hope that maybe as we go into May, a couple weeks away as the semester ends, frankly, everyone kind of goes home and there's a bit of a cooling off period. But I don't know, because if there's activism in New York City, you know, in the broader city, they might just move there until August and then come back, and we'll have the same problems we have now.
Well, people want more info on your organization. What's the best way to do that? What will they find?
Yeah, the best way is to go to thecollegefix.com, sign up for our emails. We don't know about the big tech censorship problems, but we are on all the social media platforms. And the College Fix, we train students. We are center-right, but we train them on the basics of journalism. So if you want to, you know, if you want to have journalism, please, you know, share articles, donate, however you can support us. And we cover all sorts of topics of interest to relevant radio listeners. Pro-life issue, free speech, LGBT agenda, as well as other higher education news stories.
Well, good stuff. Keep up your good work, okay? We'll touch base on again, I'm sure. I know it was a short hit today, but we'll continue to monitor it. And I appreciate your perspective, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. That's Matt Lamb, and you can check him out online, as we pointed out. Grab a pen and paper and go to thecollegefix.com. I need to take a short break. When we return, Professor Roy Shulman will be joining us. We can continue this conversation too. We could talk a little bit about the rise of anti-Semitism that we're seeing. And I was stunned by one number. I saw data earlier today showing a 337% increase in anti-Semitic incidences between October and December of 2023. That's just a couple months ago. We'll talk about that. Also, Passover begins tonight. What do you know about Passover? I'll fill you in. We'll talk about that and more right after this.
Your news. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your news now.
In later Jewish tradition, the Passover was viewed as a special kind of memorial, a special kind of remembrance. Because once Israel got into the Holy Land, once they were living in the land, they would keep celebrating the Passover every year, but time passed, right? Generations went by. Moses, for example, is around the 15th century before Christ. So they're living in the land for centuries, over 1,000 years, before you get to Jesus's time. And every year when they're celebrating that Passover, they came to recognize that when we do this memorial of the Passover, we're not just like saying, hey, remember what God did way back when for our ancestors? The Jews had a tradition that whenever you kept the Passover, that in a certain sense, you went back in time to that original night.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, so Passover begins at sundown today, I believe. So I want to talk a little bit about it. What do you know about it? We're going to do a 101 on it. You know, the our own Eucharist. There's a strong Catholic connection there. But before I do that, I was just on this anti-Semitism issue, and I've invited Professor Roy Shoman, who's been a great contributor to this program over the years. He's an adjunct professor of theology at Ave Maria University, and he's actually a convert. He's also he teaches at Holy Apostles Seminary, but he was a Jew. He had a profound experience that brought a radical conversion in his life. He's written numerous books, and I'll get you connected to his website. And I was talking to him during the break because, you know, I look at what's unfolding in this country with all of this anti-Semitism, and it disturbs me. And recent years, we have witnessed a significant rise in anti-Semitism, marked by also an increase in hateful incidences, right? That a lot of those within the Jewish community are concerned for their own safety. This is the United States of America. Somebody should not be afraid because of their faith, their religion, the color of their skin, for their safety. And this trend has been particularly pronounced, you know, following these geopolitical tensions that we're seeing in the Middle East, this Israeli Hamas war. And what Hamas did was terrible. Israel wants to eradicate them. We've seen a lot of collateral damage there. But as I was sharing, in just a short span of months between the attack on October 7th and the end of the year, 337% increase in anti-Semitic instances. And the spike is it's part of a broader trend that has seen a steady rise right now. We're seeing protest on college campuses and a whole litany of other things. Professor Shoman, good to have you with me today. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks for the invitation. Love to be here.
Protests and university campuses, that's nothing new. Fill me in on your perspective on this. As a former Jew, as a Catholic, as a professor, what are the origins of this, and how do you respond?
First of all, there's a lot of good, high quality information that's gone public if one knows where to look for it. And for instance, Iran has a very active government agency for controlling public opinion. And Iran has been orchestrating through the Muslim student organizations and through the, you know, Muslim social organizations in this country and in Europe, a lot of the current uprising on college campuses against Israel. It's not a grassroots, it's not a genuinely grassroots event. And we have the receipts. I mean, we have the documentation from, I forgot the name of the Iranian bureau that handles it. And we also know we have literally the receipts that Hamas was funded directly by the Iranian government to the tune of over 200 million British pounds, so about $250 million. And the New York Times, which is not a wildly pro-Israel publication, actually published a photocopy of the accounting sheet of the contributions, the money funneled to Hamas from Iran over about 7 years. Wow. To fund their operations. This is a once in a, you know, millennium chance in the Middle East to eradicate Israel, eradicate the Jewish presence from Israel. Mm-hmm. And these are not unsophisticated actors, and they're using their tentacles all over the world.
Yeah. Let's grab a call or two for you. Father Malik joins us. He's listening in Palos Heights, Illinois. Hi, Father. Yeah. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew, and to your guest, Roy, Professor Roy. Let me just begin by wishing our Jewish brothers and sisters a most blessed and holy Passover season. Drew, I wanted to make a comment. I grew up in Jordan, and I lived across the street from a Palestinian refugee camp, and had friends who lived there. I, you know, walked around their neighborhoods. The root cause of this issue of anti-Semitism is not being addressed. The concept of Zionism, which is the establishment of a Jewish state in the land of Palestine, right. You know, the historic Palestine from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, that land is called Palestine historically. And that's why you hear sometimes the chants from the river to the sea. But the consequence of the creation of the state of Israel has caused hundreds of thousands of families to be removed from their home in Palestine.
Right.
My friends who lived in that refugee camp still had the keys and the deeds to their homes in Palestine.
Yeah.
And nobody is addressing that issue. So unless we remove the root cause of the Palestinian refugee problem and for the Palestinians to return back to their homes, the issue of anti-Semitism is never going to go away as long as we are ignoring that basic issue of the rights. And a lot of them are Christians, by the way. The Catholic Church, the Latin Patriarch in Jerusalem, is being ignored totally for his call for the end of the occupation. And just one last comment.
Sure.
You know, this concept of Hamas, that's an Arabic acronym, which means resistance. It's a resistance movement. So what are they resisting? They're resisting occupation. So unless the occupation ends, the resistance will never end, whether you call it Hamas or something else.
Mm-hmm.
So there will always be a resistance against occupation.
Yeah.
And really, that's my only comment. As a priest, I pray for peace all the time, but I personally experience the agonies of these Palestinian refugees, and nobody is addressing their issue.
Yeah, no.
The Congress just passed a resolution to send more weapons to Israel.
Yeah.
Well, where is the logic in that? Where they're killing, there's now 34,000 people, even if you disagree with that number, or you don't, even if it's even close, or even if it's half of it.
Right.
How can we tolerate
the
genocide? We are pro-life, which means from womb to tomb, to conception to natural death. This is not natural.
Amen.
And thank you for allowing me to speak my mind. Let us continue to pray for peace in Palestine, for the Israelis and the Arabs and everybody else there. And I'll hang up so I can listen to the professor's comments and yours as well, Drew.
Father, you're
thank
welcome.
You
are welcome anytime. Love your perspective. I'm grateful for it. And Professor, I'll let you respond to Father Malik's comments.
I think the only thing that I can agree with him on is let's pray for peace. I understand that he's from Jordan originally. I also understand that his understanding of the history, let's say, is incorrect. I don't want to spend an hour on this really, but for instance, there were Jews continuously in that territory, in that area, in Palestine, since basically since the destruction of the temple. Palestine was not a nation. Palestine was the territory. It was the geographic area, like Brooklyn or something. And if you look at a newspaper from the 1930s, you know, you'll see stories about Jewish Palestinians and Muslim Palestinians and Christian Palestinians. Palestinian was not an ethnic identity. It was a geographic location. So to say that because it was called Palestine, it means that the current Arab inhabitants who call themselves Palestinians were the original inhabitants. It's just not true. And we have pilgrim reports. We have demographics and so forth from the 16th century, from the 17th century, from the 15th century. The majority population was not Muslim, and for many of those centuries, the majority population was Jewish, although there were, as a matter of fact, the number two population is Christian. So this is just, but I understand that now that we're in, you know, whatever it is, 70 years after the founding of the State of Israel, we have two or three generations of those, you know, very maligned natives that have been falsely catechized.
All right, Professor, I am grateful for your time, your perspective. Father, I am for you as well. I need to take a short pause here. When we come back, this is an issue that I know we can fiercely debate. A lot of people are passionate about it. I want to talk Passover, too, because I only have a few moments on the other side and give people a little bit of a history perspective on that and to understand what our Jewish brothers and sisters will be engaging in this evening and for the next several days. That conversation and more continues right after this.
When does he choose to go down Jerusalem? At Passover. And there's a reason. He, of course, knows the scriptures, right? But as a Jew, he's going to fulfill even their traditions about the fact that the Messiah was going to come on Passover night. And he's going to die just like the Passover lamb died. And the New Testament is really clear that that's what's going on. If you look there, the new Passover of Christ, St. Paul actually tells us, Christ, our Passover lamb, and the Greek word there is Pascha, has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us do what? Keep the feast.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So let's talk Passover. I don't know how much you know about it, whether you are plugged into what your Jewish brothers and sisters will be celebrating. I thought it would be a great 101 for you and me to better understand the origins, the traditions, the connection to the Eucharist, the history of Passover. And it is, you know, unquestionably one of the most significant religious festivals in the Jewish calendar, and it commemorates the exodus of the Israelites from slavery in ancient Egypt, as you know, you read in the Bible, particularly the book of Exodus. And, of course, the Israelites were enslaved by the Pharaoh, prompting God to send Moses. He delivered the people. Pharaoh refused Moses' plea to free the Israelites. God inflicted the 10 plagues on Egypt. We know the story, right? And the last being the death of the Egyptians' firstborn, and then the Israelites smeared the blood of a sacrificed lamb on their doorposts as a sign for the angel of death to pass over their homes and spare the firstborn. And, you know, how was this first Passover observed? How long is it? And what do we need to know? I'm joined by Professor Roy Shoman today to break it all down for us. Professor, take us back in time and unpack it all, if you could. Give us a 101.
I do want to underline the Christological significance of Passover because boy, it's front and center everywhere you look. So as you said in your intro, Passover is a celebration of the exodus of the Jews from Egypt. They were slaves there. And then God raised up a redeemer for them, Moses, and who miraculously through God's intervention, got their freedom. And, when they were free, well, I'll just say very quickly, so I think you mentioned it, but God enabled Moses to perform a bunch of miracles trying to get the Pharaoh to let him go. He finally did let them go, but as soon as they left, Pharaoh changed his mind, sent the army after them. They were trapped at the borders of the side of the Red Sea. God arranged the a foundational miracle of Judaism, which was to separate the waters of the Red Sea and let the Jews cross dry shod across the seabed, and then when the Egyptian army tried to follow, the sea flowed back and it drowned all of them. But then the Israelis or the Jews were in the desert, and they had to cross the desert, and they spent 40 years in the desert, and they didn't have very much food with them. So God provided them the miraculous bread from heaven, the manna, to sustain them in the desert until they got to what for them was the promised land, which was Israel. Moses in Judaism is known as the first redeemer, and because of the story of Exodus, the Jewish theology makes it very clear that Moses was a prefigurement of the Messiah to come, and the Messiah is going to be the ultimate redeemer, and therefore when the Messiah comes, he has to come on Passover, since he's the fulfillment of the picture in advance, which was Moses and the Exodus from Egypt, which is exactly why, by the way, that the crucifixion had to take place on Passover, because it was the fulfillment of the promise of Passover. And of course, everyone involved in the Last Supper was a Jew, so they also knew that the fulfillment of the promise would have to be on Passover. Now, from a Christian perspective, the Christology is painfully evident, and it was from the first centuries of the church. The Jews' slavery to Pharaoh in Egypt is a picture of mankind's slavery to the power of Satan. Pharaoh was a picture of Satan. Yeah. The Jews were freed from the power of Pharaoh by crossing through the waters of the Red Sea. That's a picture of the Christian being freed from the power of Satan by passing through the waters of baptism, which really literally happens, as you know, that the Christian is freed from the power of Satan. The Jews wandering through the desert for 40 years is a picture of us, and especially the Christians, wandering through the desert of this year, of this life for 40 years on their way to the heavenly Jerusalem rather than the earthly Jerusalem, the true Jerusalem, so to speak. But the Jews in the desert needed a miraculous sustenance in their wandering through the desert, which was the manna, the miraculous bread from heaven, which of course is a picture of the Eucharist, the true miraculous bread from heaven, which sustains the Christian in their wandering through this life, so to speak, on the way to heaven. And Jesus himself in John 6 makes the comparison very, very overt. He says, I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, but they died nonetheless. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread which I shall give for the life of the world is my flesh. So everything about Passover is Christological.
My guest today, Professor Roy Shoman. We're taking a look at Passover and everything that you need to know about it. How long does it last, Professor? The Seder the Seder meal, as well. Maybe you can expand a little bit more on the context of that in terms of the Eucharist.
Well, the heart of that is, of course, that the Last Supper was a Seder meal. And the Last Supper was simultaneously, one could say, the last sacramental Seder meal and the first, it was the first sacramental Catholic Mass. So one can very easily see the Last Supper as the single point in time when the old covenant and the Jewish sacramental system was transformed into the new covenant and the Catholic sacramental system. And in fact, the reason why the host is unleavened bread in the Roman Church is precisely because at the Last Supper, it was matzah. It was the ceremonial bread that is used throughout Passover as a remembrance of the Jews not being able to let their bread rise before they fled into the desert. The Passover is a week long, 7 or 8 days, depending on where you are. If you're in Israel, it's 7 days. If you're out of Israel, it's 8 days. They do that. It's a long story, so I'll leave that aside for now. Okay. It begins with the Passover Seder meal, which is a ritual meal with a lot of ritual foods, which are symbolic of the slavery in Egypt and the liberation from the slavery in Egypt. And it is around not everyone has to eat lamb, but it is a memorial of the very first Passover, which was the night in Egypt when the last miracle that Moses performed for the Pharaoh that got him to finally let the Jews leave was the slaying of the firstborn, where the angel of death came through Egypt and slayed the firstborn in every house of every animal and of every person. And for the Jews not to have their firstborn killed, they were told to slaughter a spring lamb and daub the blood of the lamb on the doorposts on their houses, and that would tell the angel of death to pass over and not slay the firstborn. That's why it's called Passover. And if you just look at that, just think of it. We know that Jesus was the true Passover lamb, and it was his blood on the cross which saved us, caused the angel of death, so to speak, to pass over us. And if you think of the houses in Egypt, the only wood, I mean, the lintel and the doorpost, which is what the Bible says where they had to daub the blood, would be the crossed wood at the doorpost of the house.
Wow. Let me do this. We only have a couple minutes. I'm going to grab a couple of phone calls for you. Greg is in Glen Burnie, Maryland. Hi, Greg.
Yes, I'm curious about, I know that the Christ's bones were not broken and there's scriptural references to that, but in my investigations, I found out that it was also prohibited to break the bones of the Paschal lamb at the original Passover, and I was wondering if there was any explanation as to what this means.
All right, great.
No, well, I don't know whether there is any explanation. I don't know an explanation of why God did the commandment. It's in Exodus chapter 12, verse 43, quote, "And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this is an ordinance of the Passover, you shall not break a bone of it." So we know that it was an explicit command by God that was immortalized in the Torah, in the Old Testament. Why God didn't want any bones of it to be broken, I don't know, but it's not hard how can I put it? If you just have the imagination that every Passover lamb was a picture of Jesus to come, then you can start thinking that perhaps there was some kind of reverence or you know, symbolic respect that was shown by that.
Yeah. Professor, I only have a moment or two left. I know we have a lot of phone calls here. I'm about to pray the chapel to Divine Mercy, but I do want to get people connected to you and to your story. I know your website is Salvation is fromthejews.com, and people can pick up your books. You got a great conversion story, and I'll tell you, it's well worth it. But your YouTube channel, people want to check that out. That's Jewish Catholic. What will they find there? I don't think I've ever checked it out. I still have to do that.
Yeah, it's Jewish Catholic, all in one word. I tell every day, pretty much. I mean, at least five or six times a week. I have actually at 3 o'clock Eastern, I have a Divine Mercy Chaplet followed by a short talk. Sometimes it's very short. Sometimes it's not so short. And I also have hundreds of teaching videos on my channel. Everything's for free, of course. That's but, you know, the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church and, you know, just various aspects of Catholic spirituality, very often with a little Jewish light shown on it.
Cool. YouTube channel, Jewish Catholic, all one word. Salvation is from the Jews.com. And we'll bring Professor Shulman back again. He's always a lot of fun to talk to. Professor, thank you for your time.
Thanks.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy is straight ahead. I hope you'll join me for that. I think there is only one or two lines open, and it'll fill up very quickly. The number to get in, 888-914-9149. If you're on hold, I'll do my very best to get you on. And we'll take your petitions. Maggie will screen them on our social media platforms. And we'll pray right after the short break. Stay tuned.